This tape was made December the 18th, 1972. The interviewer is Henry Smith. The interviewee is Marion Chandler. She was born in 1901 and came to Kingsville in 1917. She worked in the Claybrook First National Bank for many, many years. She's very familiar with all the people of the King Ranch and many, many of the other settlers, early settlers of the area.
He's there now, don't you know? But I was just telling you about the main street to see it was rough and we couldn't get across the mud hole half the time when it rained there between Ragman's and there. Mm-hmm. So we'll, next we come down our side on the sidewalk, look up the stairs across the streets to get his orders, don't you know?
Where was that whiskey coming from?
I don't know where he got it from. Who laid it in somewhere? Probably from San Diego, the border. Yeah. Maybe from Monterey. He'd take his orders today and you'd get it delivered tomorrow. That's like all bootleg stubbles, you know. They told a good joke. I don't know who the man was. I didn't have it, but I heard it many times. Came in and wanted to get a bottle of something to drink, you know. Mm-hmm. The fella says, well, we're driving. We're still supposed to be, don't you know? They didn't sell beer here for years and years and years. And they said, where can we get a bottle of whiskey? We'll have a little party tonight. He said, well, come here, I'll show you where you can get it. And he took him down, you know, down the corner in front of the old high school, all the churches mm-hmm. how close together. He took it by each church. He pointed out, said, this is the Methodist church, this is the Baptist church, this is the Presbyterian, and on up a little further, the Episcopal church, made the rounds, the Nazarene, and went on back over and said, now here's the Catholic, and this is the Christian church across from it. The early days are all right downtown. Mm-hmm. He said, now don't knock there for any, but says, that's the only doors in Kingsville I know of where you can't get a quart if you're willing to pay the price. Then you couldn't buy it at the churches, you know. Mm-hmm. There's much of that going on, you know. They raid them, the officers try to catch them, they confiscate stuff. I don't know anybody I've got hurt, I might have. I never did know of that, though.
What were some of the other raids? You know, you said there was a train derailed or something.
Yeah, there was a train raid down there on where the bandits held it up. I don't know what they were after off of it, I guess. There's a passenger train coming through, is what they held up down at the Norris. You know where Norris mm-hmm. is down here? So that used to be in the middle of a pasture. They came through the King Ranch pasture down there. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's always been enmity between Mexico and the King Ranch that claimed they stole land from them, but they didn't. Because my great grandfather was a seafaring captain along with Captain King, Captain Kennedy, and he owned all Friendswood, all Morgan's Point up there. Old Colonel James Morgan, this mm-hmm. is my great grandfather. Mm-hmm. And he did the same thing they did. They traded him land for pastures because land was cheap in those days. Mm-hmm. When my father sold his ranch over here, land around us was selling for $3.75 an acre. And Dad had talked about selling, but he hadn't sold. And of course, we didn't have anything as big as King Ranch, but we just had a ranch. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know how many acres it was in. As I said, I was quite small then. And these some bankers from Seguin came down there. They wanted to buy it. Told Dad to name his price, and he said, well, he said, I'm not going to run cattle on it anymore. I'm in another business now. He said, I'm going to sell it and sell it for cash. Well, that was the day before income tax or anything. You know, he didn't consider taking a little bit now and waiting 50 years to get the rest of it. And he said, well, he says, name your price. And Dad studied a few minutes, and he said, well, I wouldn't think of taking a cent less than $6.75 an acre. No place had sold for more than $3.75. Mm-hmm. Dad thought it was my way to get rid of them. And they said, would you take $6.75 an acre? And Papa says, yes, if anybody's fool enough to pay it. And they said, well, you sold your ranch.
Mm-hmm.
And they bought it and paid for it. My dad always did that. He had some buildings over at Alice. And he didn't really want to sell them, but a fella kept after him to buy one of the big brick stores. He had a couple of them down Main Street. Kept after you to buy one of them. And he said, oh, you don't want that property over there. Says, taxes are going high over there all the time and all. Says, I really don't care whether I sell the thing or not. Finally asked him, says, what will you take for it? And I don't remember what Dad named, but he named about twice what it was selling for. The fellow says, well, you bought it. I'm buying it. Well, Dad wouldn't go back on his word. He said, you know, I kind of hate to sell that milk. Listen, I'm going to go back on my word. My father went to his grave just that way. He never... There's two things he couldn't tolerate, and that was a man that would lie and would steal. Those were the two things we were taught. I never told him a word in my life when I was a little tiny girl, and he never spanked me, not enough to hurt me. It was the only whipping I ever got from him in my life. We had a peach tree. We lived in the country. We never saw fruit except at Christmas time was brought in, you know. Mm-hmm. These peaches were up on the tree hanging there so pretty. He said, don't bother those peaches now. There's five of them up there. Says, you can have two and your brother can have two and we guess we'll give the other one to Mama. And one day I was down there by myself and oh, they look so good. And one of them just looks so pretty. And I just knew it was right. And I looked all around and I didn't see anybody. And I thought, I believe I'll just take one of those. And I pulled it off and bit into it. And just as I did, it was, you know, green.
Mm-hmm.
And I threw it just as far over the fence as I could. And I turned around and I stood my dad. And he said, what are you doing? I said, nothing. He said, what have you been doing? And I said, nothing. And he looked up and he said, well, look around. One of the peaches is gone. I wonder what happened to it. Oh, no. He walked right straight to that peach, opened the gate, and went walked straight out, picked it up. I started crying. And he says, turn around, go to the house. I said, I know you did it. Got to that peach tree and you broke a little limb off. Couldn't kill a mosquito with it hardly, you know.
Yeah.
But he spanked my ankles all the way to the house. And I never told him another lie, ever. I learned my lesson right then. I don't hardly know what to tell you on that. Things there that would be of interest to the general public.
Mm-hmm.
Other than a few new questions. I mean, and more like that, don't you know? Except just like I'm running along. If you could pick out some of the highlights, if I could help you on that. Or some of the people that used to live in the early days of interest. Maybe I know some of the things about them.
Well, all the Claybirds and all. Of course, everybody's always interested in them. Any little stories or anything about them that most people wouldn't know?
Well, I'd have to be off the guard with those because they're my very dearest and closest friends. Yeah. I worked for them all those many years. You know, I couldn't say anything except nice about them because they've all been lovely to me always. A lot of interesting stories. One of the great stories concerns Alice Claybird, you know, Alice East. Mm-hmm. I've known San Antonio Viejo where she is now. You know, she's no longer with King Ranch. She left her, when Mrs. Claybird died, the will was fixed if any of the children were dissatisfied. They formed a corporation over the King Ranch that they could get out of the ranch.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, this part out here brought in all the oil. Richard King had his interest down near Edinburgh from Corpus. And Richard wanted to get in on this oil up here. And he bought Alice out. They swapped. She took the Santa Fe Ranch down there, and she took San Antonio Viejo Ranch out of Hebronville. And I don't know what else, but she gave him her interest here in the Santa Gertrudis part of it. And wasn't too long after that all happened that they brought in all wells on the Santa Fe. And that last time I went deer hunting with her over at the San Antonio Viejo, you had to be careful which way you shot. You didn't shoot a hole in the oil tank over there. Deer standing all around the oil tanks over there. But that was what happened. But she was out there on San Antonio Viejo years ago. Her husband, Tom East, they had that part of the ranch, even when it belongs, all in the King Ranch, you know. And they were working cattle, and the men were a little late coming in, and she went on to the ranch a little bit early to get supper ready, and she was by herself, and hadn't been there very long until a bunch of bandits drove up to it, and she spoke good Mexican, you know, in the kitchen working, had a bandana tied over her head. They asked her where the patron was, and she said he was working cattle. She knew what they were. She knew because they'd been warned time after time. And he said, what's he doing? She said, he's working cattle. He said, they'll be here in a few minutes. You want to see him? He said, no, they didn't want to see him. They were looking for the senora, his wife.
Mm-hmm.
So she might have taken for ransom, don't you see, because she was part of the family.
Yeah.
And she said, they kept on talking, and they said, who are you? What do you do here? And she said, I'm the cook. And he said, make us some, fix us some meat and some bread. We're hungry. And she went to work making them biscuits. And I don't know, I never did know the story. I don't think Alice even remembers what they ever ate it or not. But anyway, she thought she heard the Tom and the boys coming in, you know. She told him, she said, I think I hear them coming now. She said, they got guns on the saddle. Says, if you all want to, see, she thought, they thought she was Mexican working there. She talked Spanish so good, she was kind of dark. Said, if you want to get away from the safe, said, you better go right now, because there's, boy, they shoot just the minute they see you all here. And they heard a noise. Something happened. I don't know what it was. Maybe it was them coming or somebody. Yeah. You know how they let out a Comanche yell once in a while. Anyway, they all got on the horses then and left, and they told her that they'd be back. Said, when would be a good time to catch the senora there? And she said, well, she couldn't tell them that. Said she came and went as she pleased. They drove off and left her. Had her right there in the grip. But didn't know it. I had lots of experiences.
What about, you said there were some troops stationed in here in town. Yeah. Do you know anything about what they did?
I didn't do any researching on that. I know you do. Remember, just recently I had the range gate. They erected a monument to Patch, General Patch.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was, he married Minerva King, one of the range girls. Mm-hmm. That was Mr. Richard King Sr.'s sister to this Richard King. I was telling you that bought out Alice, you know. And he was in charge.
Yeah.
And they erected that monument out there. But I'll tell you who did a lot of research on that would be Ms. Mule, Ms. Robert Mule.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's in the Historical Society because she talked to me about it then. And I just a few short months ago, and there was only one soldier that ever came back here to live that was in that night. And you might have known him. He's postmaster, worked in the post office here for years, and that was Pete Rasmussen. Both of his boys finished the NI out here.
Sounds familiar.
And he married the Fowler girl here. There were several weddings that Minerva and Doris Patch, they stayed together always. He was a brother to General Patch, the 4- or 5-star general died several years ago. Doris is dead now, too. And then...
But how many soldiers were there at one time, you know?
It was how many are in the troop? they called it a troop, I think, then. Yeah. It must have been... They had tents pitched down there.
Or were there the cavalry or what? Or
just infantry troops there, I think they are.
Or were they just guards around town? Or
no, they just kept them stationed here in case the bandits made a raid in the town here, don't you see?
Mm-hmm.
They stationed them down here. And
about what year was that?
Well, let's see, I came in 1913. It was in 13, 14, 15, 16, somewhere along there before the war, before World War One. Declared World War One in April of 17, and I graduated in May. And this was before that, when we were reckoning. I finished pretty young in high school. Some of the girls were older than me that dated those soldiers and dates down here then. And they got so they'd come up and hang around the school yards, you know. And the school put the camp out of bounds to any of the high school girls. You couldn't go down there around it, don't you know?
What about law enforcement around here? Do you know anything about, you know, just general enforcement? Well, much trouble or anything? Or has it been a pretty calm area?
Well, I guess it was real calm in those days, considered what they got now, don't you know? they didn't have cars to get in trouble and all like that, no. When I came here, old man Scarborough was sheriff out here. Jim's father.
Yeah.
And then after he got out or died, I don't remember whether old man died or got it, I think, Tom Mosley came in.
Mm-hmm.
And was for a short time. And then Jim went in. And now I understand Jim used to go in February. So it's just been held up old men that I know of. That's since Claiborne County, and I'm sure that, because I came here, the county was formed in May, and I came in September. We had a volunteer fire department in those days. My brother used to be in it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We had a government the same way. The commissioners didn't get paid or anything, you know. We had a good time until the college came in and the Navy came in. Selenese came in. We had a pretty nice little town.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what I mean is a small communities that got so big now, you know. We've gotten such a... Well, of course, everywhere's like that. It's changed all over the world. We were going to move to Corpus. My dad bought a whole block over there. My uncle, whose wife was one of the descendants of old Colonel Morgan, all those streets over there named Craig and Morgan and... Mm-hmm. All those streets and Corpus were named for them. He owned everything from Spahn Cemetery We went out to the Naval Air Station, all that land on the south end of Culpis. Mm-hmm. He owned St. Joseph Island. He was importing wild animals. This was all before the 1919 storm. And when that storm came in 1919, it wiped that island clean. He never did know what happened to his animals or anything.
What kind of animals were
they? From the foreign countries, bringing them in, you know, anything that would live in this climate and things over there. Just had a regular menagerie over there. Owned St. Joseph Island, you know, it was a place for people to go. And after the 1916 storm was bad, but the 1919 is when they got the tidal wave, you know, washed clear over the island and everything. And I know in one mass grave over there, they said they buried about 1,500 people in Corpus. They just dug a great big trench and put the bodies in there because they'd dig them up out of the mud and clear back up the river. They were floating on rafts of rattlesnakes and everything else. But Corpus never would tell it. They always said about 300-something were lost in the storm, you know. They didn't want to. And that was the deadest town that ever lived. And I used to go over there, we used to go over there, and I had a convertible years later. And that part of town never had built back. The old Alta Vista Hotel was still standing out there on the bluff. And we'd go over there with 22 rifles and chase those jackrabbits and shoot them out there, you know, just like, and wild donkeys over there. And that was all where all, now you couldn't buy land any price. Well, my uncle owned all that, and right adjoining him, he built them. We had the loveliest home over there. It was later sold to an Indian, and then, the Claybergs lived in it for a long time over there. They built it around an inner patio. Mm-hmm. And had the most beautiful fountain in there and everything. And Mother and I went down there to spend a week with them. Dad bought a block back up. We were going to move there instead of here. Mm-hmm. We went down there and stayed a week, and we just didn't like that climate. It was got to be when it was misty and foggy, and my aunt had glass knobs for hanging everything on. Mm-hmm. Everything rusted smudge, you know. Mm-hmm. They had a whole block in their yard, a rose garden. It was a beautiful thing. It was a palace. This crystal fountain and all this stuff, you know, you walk in, it was just gorgeous. And when we came away, Mama asked me how I liked it, and I said, I wouldn't live there if you'd give me that house or any part of town. I don't like it. Just a little girl, about 10 years old. Mm-hmm. She said, I don't either. And the old doctor over here came up to see us, he and his wife, and he said, why don't y'all come down to Kingsville? Said, there's some vacant lots right across the street from us. So that's a nice little town. Said, it's a young town. It's growing. He said, why don't you come down? They said, there's not over 2,500 to 3,000 people in the little town. It's a clean little town, and got good schools there. Mm-hmm. And we came down here, and Dad bought this corner right here. And he turned around and sold that whole big piece of land over there. Of course, I guess he got it cheap. I don't know what my uncle got it for and for. He sold it for $800. We always like, my aunt used to say that, say, we have all this, Colonel Morgan's land over there, Friendly Woods, that big humble oil fields built on our land. And for this reason, his wife lived there. They had four children. And when she died, he was an old seafaring captain, like Captain King. They all shipped together up and down the coast here. You know, they'd bring firearms down for the Civil War and then load with cotton and haul it back north. And he couldn't keep four children on land and him on the sea all the time, you know, so he took them all back to Kentucky. And later, somebody wanted to buy that land, and then he sold it all. Well, he didn't have any rights to sell the insurance part, don't you know? Mm-hmm. And some lawyer got a hold of it, and for a long time, of course, the law of limitations almost would do away with it, and people bought it good faith. But for many years, a lot of people, I don't know who did it, but the lawyer would send papers for Mother as one of the heirs to sign a release on, and send checks, you know, to clear the title on it. She got checks for a long, long time. Then my uncle died. They entered a $10 million suit. And the lawyer was a man that had graduated with Dick Claiborne, Sr. And I asked Dick about him. And he said, well, unless he's got to be a crook since we left school, he wasn't a finer person in the law school. Ebony was a very honorable fellow. But he died, and soon after that, my uncle died. And nobody pushed it anymore, and it just stopped. And then the city of Baltimore's built on land that belonged to us, too. I had three uncles came over from the old country, my great-great-uncles of mine. And two of them were Jesuit priests, and the other one didn't marry. He had was not a priest. He had a family, very small family. But the granddaughter could never remember. It was Lord Baltimore. They were of the nobility of England. And when he died, he owned this leagues of land up there in Virginia, you know, mm-hmm. and they wanted to build the city of Baltimore on his land. And he said that he didn't want to sell the land, and they said, lease it to us. And he said, I'll lease it for 100 years. He knew he wouldn't be there when the lease was up, you know, but you see, he was a priest, and all he wanted was the money in his church. And when the 100 years was up, he told, I don't know who he told, some member of the family, but the granddaughter was the only one living at that time then, of his brother's granddaughter. And she didn't have the name of the bank where he'd left the papers. So to this day, we don't know what bank they're in or where they are, showing his title to it. So my aunt said one day, she said, well, one thing for sure with our family, if it was raining soup, we'd get caught out in it within a fork. I thought that was a cute way she expressed it. I used to listen to the early tales and say, I wish I could remember. Now, Frank Dobie wrote this Coronado's Jurin, you know. Mm-hmm. And Frank's dad had a ranch 6 miles from us. Frank's house was 6 miles from us. He came down here at the college when the college first started in the early days here. Talk out here, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, later taught at the university, yeah. And he was exchanged with them. I never was very proud of Frank, because I bet the English people thought he was horrible over there, you know. But anyway, he used to come by here always to see us. And he said to me one day, he said, Myron, he said, you heard all those old ranger stories and cowboy things and all when you were a child. Old man Tom McNeil is one of the old rangers over there. They buried his youngest daughter yesterday. She has one more girl living now. The family's all dead. I knew all of them. He used to come down to our house, and he lost in some scuffle with the bandits or something. They shot his right hand off here, and he had these reins facing up in the back of the buggy, you know, and he'd pull with his left hand, you know, and drive his horses. And in those days, if anybody came to your house in the morning, well, you put the horses loose and put them in the pen and fed them, you know, and they ate dinner with you. He never came to our house. He didn't stay all day. He'd come down there, dad's store, you know, to get supplies for his range and spend the day with us. Right after dinner, we'd have to fix him a bed, and he'd have his siesta, and then they'd get up, and they wore slick places on the gallery post, putting their boots up there, you know, and drinking their coffee after dinner. So my brother and I knew they were going to do that, and we were about 8, 9 years old. Mom would make us rest a little while in the middle of the day, summertime. We'd put our pallet right between their chairs, and we'd fake we were asleep so we could hear them talk. Mm-hmm. And So they came in and said, who's been cleaning up here? I said, I did. I don't see how you're working all this dirt. Janet had been sick. Nobody had even cleaned up there. No, I started in as learning bookkeeping in the book department. I went there to work when we didn't have it. We had one adding machine in the bank, and you crank that by hand. And I stood. You'd have to stand and use it. A woman would, don't you know? Mm-hmm. There was two boys working in there. They'd get up astride of it in the evenings after work, you know, hook their feet up over it, get up astride on a stool, and sit there and crank on that thing, you know. But I did bookkeeping down there with Penny Meek. Really pioneered. One of the girls down there the other day said, you don't even know what banking is anymore. Says, you just ought to know how complicated it is now. And I said, wait just a minute. I said, all you need now is a strong back and the eyesight to punch a button. That's all you all do down here. I said, I worked in here when you had to figure it out up here. No, why it didn't click. You had to go back and find Jera. I said, you don't know what work is. I worked there 35 years. I'm only indefinite leave. I asked for a leave of absence. I don't know how long a leave of absence legally is good for, but don't make any difference. I'm not going back anyway. Mm-hmm. That's when I got to know all the ranch people and everything. And I went to work there in 1919. And by 1921, I was carrying keys to the ranch and hunting where I pleased and going with them in old target, old calling men. Fishing on the high seas and going to the tarpon rodeos and all those things through the years. They've been wonderful to me, just lovely. So I can only say the nicest things for that. Now, the younger generation, of course, that's their churin and grandchurin. I don't know that. I don't have occasion to be with them too much, don't you know? Mm-hmm. I'm sure if there was any time ever that I ever needed to call on them for any favor, I'd have it, but I never expect to. I never have. Mm-hmm. I never will. I'm not built that way. I see we're getting one of our local people has just been made a counselor to President Nixon on the cabinet, and that's Ann Armstrong.
Yeah, I read that in paper.
I was secretary of the old settlers. I organized the old settlers club, you know, that met here, the ones that lived here, you know, before 1916, the early years. And little Helen Clayburgh called me one night, and she said, "Miss Chandler, can anybody go to the old settlers and get people that live here?" And I said, "Well, sure, honey, any house guest you have, or anybody out of the county, nobody living in the county, if they're not a member of the family or eligible." And she said, "Well, I have some girlfriends out here visiting me," when she was in Vassar. And she said, "Could I take my two friends?" And I said, "Well, sure." I said, "Who are they, so I can meet them and introduce them?" And she said, "Nancy Rockefeller and Anne LeGendry from New Orleans." Nancy was from New York. And I knew her dad and mother, Nelson Rockefeller, and his first wife, Mary. They used to come down here. In fact, they were down here just a visit just a few months before the twins were born. You remember when Bob was lost in New Guinea?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I said, "Well, sure, Helenita." I said, "Have you got any dates for those girls? Don't y'all want some dates?" And she said, "Oh, my, and I don't know where I'd find dates for them." And I said, "My goodness." I said, "You rustle your own date, because I don't know who you like around here." But I said, "Why don't you ask B. Johnson for one of them, your cousin? And why don't you ask Tobin Armstrong? He's a nice youngster from down the ranch down below here." "Oh," said, "I hadn't thought about them." Of course, she thinks of them as kinfolks, you know. Mm-hmm. And so Tobin had a blind date with her that night. And I guess it was love from the first sight, because they married shortly after that, you know. I always kid him and tease him, you know. I said, "If it hadn't been for me, suggestion, those girls had, well, I thought young people would like company, don't you know, somebody to bring them along." I'm real proud of little old Anne, though. She's smart as a whip. She's just real brilliant. I guess she's done a pretty good job. She liked that kind of life.
Do you know of any, you know, small industries that were started here in Kingsville?
Any cotton mills, and that fell through with, you know.
Yeah.
And we had a local organization. Remember the old Caprock Oil Company here? Things organized, people bought stock in. I got some of the stock shares in here now, my mother and dad. Dad bought and never mind anything, but they didn't hurt themselves. They didn't buy any of them. Mm-hmm. When they got an oil boom on here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was a Caprock Oil Company and the Clayburgh County Oil and Gas, I believe they called it.
Mm-hmm.
That's before the Houston Natural Gas moved in, bought it all up, you know. They never did anything back on it. Dividends or nothing else. I was real smart. I got out from one of the San Antonio cotton oil. I mean, not San Antonio. It was the mills down here. That's where the Clayburgh School is now. You know, mm-hmm. Alice Clayburgh School there, just as you go out of town, north.
Yeah.
On 6th Street.
Mm-hmm.
That was the cotton mills there.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted, it was a stock company, sold stock in it. And I bought, I think it's 200 shares. I forgot what it cost now, but I bought 200 shares. And that's when I was working for a little bit and pay it out for the month, don't you know? They let you do that. And I kind of held up on mine to see how it'd go along, you know. And so one day they said to me something about, I knew the thing was getting kind of rocky. And they needed wood. And a bunch of these ranchers out here back with Tex-Mex down there, the old man Simmons and a bunch of them down there, lived down there then, were selling wood to them up here, and they were taking stock for the wood.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to the bookkeeper down there one day, I said, "Give them my 200 shares and get you some wood for them. I don't believe I want them. I don't have to pay for them that way." I said, "You really mean? Well, you want to let them go?" And I said, "Yeah, I don't want them. I haven't gotten used for them." And they, I don't know who got them. I don't even know, but they trade them somebody for wood instead of somebody else's, you know. I want to get rid of mine. I hope the fellow didn't. I don't think he ever got anything out of it, but I don't know what he did, know if it was sold or not. It's Mr. Jones here. His father-in-law was the man that opened those mills here. He just came to work for a local concern. I don't know who all. I guess the King Ranch had an interest in it too at the time, but they didn't push it actively because they had to take it over and pay off the indebtedness, whatever it was. And that's why they acquired that land.
Yeah.
And that's why they built that Alice G. Clayburgh School and gave it to the city, you know, gave it back. Like with the railroad, you see, they took back the land where the general office was when the general office moved away from here. And Hummel built in there. I see the other day they were advertising buying that little street there with the post office on the west side. Said it belonged to the railroad.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that belongs to the railroad or not, because that was all ranch land, but I guess Maybe that strip did. Maybe that's part of the right of way, where the tracks are still there, don't you know?
Yeah.
But I don't know if they have a right to sell it, not legally. There's a legal point there on that. Because Mr. Old Man Clayburgh made the deal. He was a wonderful old man. He died in 32. I worked in the bank from 13 years before he died. I even had the pleasure of going out and staying with Grandma King at nights out there, too. Many a night I stayed out there. You've heard. And he gave that land right away for the railroad through here with the understanding that at any time the railroad pulled up or deserted any of it, it would revert back to the ranch. And I think they've gotten a lot of the land down there where the shops were, too, because I see some long on south from there, I think the lumber company, Kingsville Lumber Company, has built some big storage sheds on those blocks back in the general, where the old general office used to be back that way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think that belongs to Kingsville Lumber Company, the ranch there.
Mm-hmm.
Where they can unload stuff, don't you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I know what you're talking about.
They took that land back, too, I think. So I don't know whether the ranch owns that street up there. And of course, I don't think the ranch would argue with it if the city wanted to keep it as a street there. It wouldn't mean anything to them. Like they did that old ice plant, you know, when the city wanted to buy that old bank building.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to trade that ice plant in. I don't know what they got for it. Somebody told me I could go down and look if I wanted to know. I'm not that interested, but somebody told me that they gave them $25,000 for that old building. And then turned around and converted it into this Henrietta auditorium now, you know, something nice for the city. I understand Bob has sweet collections. I haven't seen Bob talk to him for quite a little while. About downtown, you know, just don't bump into him. But I understand that they've picked up, I think, three museum collections somewhere around the world in their travels. And that they're going to open a museum in one of these other rooms down here. Would be nice for the city.
Yeah, would be nice. Do you remember any of the old stores, you know, the original hardware stores and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, the old bank building used to be down there on 6th Street, you know. Ranch offices used to be where Clyde Ellen's business is. Now, that was the old publishing company in part of that building there, which the ranch owned. Mm-hmm. And then they had their offices down there when Mr. Finnegan was the manager of all that.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Raglan's was named for John Raglan. They just kept the name on the business year. He was Alice before he came over here. I knew that family real well because his wife's brother and my mother used to be boy and girl sweethearts years ago, so I heard of them when I was little, you know. And then I went to the university with some of their family too, the next university when I was there. Some of the Raglan boys went to school here when I went to school. I think they're all of them dead now, the boys. Yeah, Main Street was just about a block long. They were just finishing the courthouse when I came here.
Mm-hmm.
They laid it out, you know, so the high school faces the courthouse, and the courthouse faces the high school. And the architecture work, by the way, on speaking of the schools, when they built this, they started out in a little one-room building here, and Miss Turner, her uncle, well, her stepfather was. Her mother was a widow, and she married old man Andy Ferguson, worked out here at the ranch. And when the town began growing a little bit after the first story, there were a few children here needed schooling, and she taught them. Mm-hmm. There were six little children at first. She taught those little ones. And I think she had a little room. I don't know where the room was here in town, that maybe in her home. But then more working people came in, more people began getting married here and having children. They took this building over here on 3rd Street, corner of Alice and 3rd. It's now an apartment house. It's built kind of an L shape like that.
Yeah.
But it was the first school building. And they had school there. They just went to the 10th grade. And they had school there for... Miss Turner's school outgrew. And the 19... I don't remember that looking back on my book. The years they had, they fixed this little building. And there was a one man and two women teachers there. And that grew to where they, and the way it was financed, Caesar Clayburgh, they just took up a collection here and paid the teachers to teach these kids. Mm-hmm. And one year they ran out of money before the time was over, and Mr. Caesar paid them off. And he told them they better organize the school system. The town was getting big enough for it, so they organized a mm-hmm. public school system. And outgrew their building, had to, so they were going to float bombs. In some way, in the way they had done it, they couldn't do it. There was some legal point in the way it had been done, whoever did it, I don't know who did it. And they needed more schooling, so Mrs. Keene, she was a wonderful, wonderful person. She said, well, go ahead and build the building and give it to them. I'll dedicate them. And they built this building.
Mm-hmm.
It was started in 1909, completed in 1910. And then they moved from this little building over to the school. Well, they moved first grade till on through the. And when they moved over, they added, the last year they had school, I believe the first year they had it over here, it was 10th grade, and then they added on the 11th grade. The first graduate of this school was one girl in 1911. That's right, they moved over here in the fall of 1910. Mm-hmm. She graduated in spring of 1911. She's living in Kerrville now.
Mm-hmm.
I've known her all through the years. In fact, my mother introduced her to the boy she married. And then the next year, they added the 11th grade on. And the superintendent's son, and that was old man Colston, was Riley Colston and Eddie Sellers,
mm-hmm.
here and Angie's husband, and Arthur Peterson. Three boys in the class. And if they didn't raise Mary Old Ned when they added them that year, they were seniors that year, they had to go another year. And they always told Marjorie she didn't graduate from this high school because she only did 10 grades. And they had to do 11.
Yeah.
And then the next year, there were two girls. One of them was Irma Robinson. She married Gus Kowalski. He died not too long ago across the street from here. And the other one was Helen Battle. She's now passed on too. And the year, the third graduating class, I was a freshman. I came that year and started school. Yes, that's how far back I go with school, see?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget it because I was about 11 years old or 12 years old. I guess I was 12 because I graduated when I was 16. Yeah, I went 4 years. They chose this old prick to pair this yellow blossom for their flower, and we had to decorate the stage. They had an opera house, you know, downtown. You know where that was. And we had to decorate that stage with those cactus. Well, you remember. Know how full our fingers were of thorns, but I think we hated that class. Ooh, we hated those two girls that chose that old cactus for the thing.
Was that opera house over at Flatos Hardware?
There was a big hall just the side of it, and then there was an opera house that ran this way. That's why they later had the saddle shop upstairs years ago when old man Freddy ran it.
Hmm.
Then they did away the stage. No, I don't think it's anything up there except storage rooms now. But that's where I graduated. That was a stage. We didn't have an auditorium.
Yeah.
That, you know, see, the high school burned in 25. I graduated in 17, spring of 17. But they had, they always had all their exercises up there because we didn't have a big auditorium in high school. Then we didn't have any kind of a meeting room. It was just classrooms and principal's office and the dean's office, and that was all.
Mm-hmm.
And those two little buildings out in the yard there on the south side, we had home economics in one, and the other one was chemistry and physics lab. There were little sheds built out there. There's two little rooms in them,
mm-hmm.
each of them. And then my sister-in-law, well, the year she was a senior, the high school building burned. But when Ms. King designed that, she had the architects, she wanted to build something typical. South Texas, something in the line. And if you ever noticed the domes on top there, and they were going to raise that all down, you know, change that recently when they mm-hmm. built the new high school.
Yeah.
And our alumni stepped in and saved it. We thought it should have been preserved because that was her eye and her gift. And I think because it has, if you'll notice that in right in the center, it's just the outline of the Alamo, top of the Alamo.
Mm-hmm.
That was to represent the Alamo of Texas. Mm-hmm. Remember the Alamo. And then on those towers on one side, one of them is a perfect replica of the, both of them are, of missions in San Antonio, where the towers, where the bells are, and which was old Spanish architecture back before Texas, when Texas still belonged to Mexico, you know, those were built up there.
Mm-hmm.
I heard all those old stories that Frank Dobie wrote, you know. I gave Dad the book when it came out, and he thumbed through it a few minutes later and said, here, take this trash. And I said, what's the matter? He said, oh, that upstart, he don't even know, that didn't happen that way. But, you know, writer's privilege, he changed it around, you know.
Yeah.
So Frank came by here one evening to see my dad. And my father's name was James Rush, but they always called him Rush. And he said, Uncle Rush. In those days, we were taught to call older people aunt and uncle if they were real close, you know. Yeah. He said, Uncle Rush. Pop said, what in the heck are you doing down here? Said, I know you're not up to any good. Just kidding, you know. And he said, oh, I got to make a talk. I had to college tonight, Uncle Bush. He said, what are you going to talk about? He said, I'm going to talk on rattlesnakes and coyotes. I said, oh, I thought they taught something out there. And he says, are you going out to Uncle Rush? And Papa looked at him. It's funny. And he says, going out there? He says, what do you reckon I ought to go out there for? He said, boy, I've forgotten more about this part of the country than you ever knew. And he said, oh, I'm so relieved. He said, I can get up and say what I want to tonight, can't I? And Papa said, well, you tell them a pack of lies. And he says, yeah, but I know you won't stand right up there and shake your finger at me and say, now look here. You know that's not true, Frank. That didn't happen that way at all. Here's how it happened. You had to be exact with my dad, don't you know? It had to be told. If you're going to tell the thing, tell it for the truth.
Yeah. Do you know anything about when the little Ricardo or Rivera communities were first started, or who started
down there? They were already started when I came here. Mm-hmm. That land, old man Nicole came in here and bought that land down there. That is Danny Rivera down in there, not at Ricardo. That was all ranch land at one time, don't you know? I think the Kingsville, the Claiborne Town Improvement and the Kingsville Land Investment Company sold all that farmland off down in there. Old man Plato.
Yeah.
Senior lived right next to me in this two-story house here at that time. Was in charge then. And the Cokes, they came from Minnesota, I think, down here. He used to bring these train loads of home seekers, you know. They had an interurban railway that ran from there out the beach. When we were children in high school here, we used to take our picnics. We used to play hooky on the 1st of April. That was understood. The teachers played it with us. We all went on picnics, and we'd ride the main line railroad to Rivera, and then get off and get on that little urban, and it went out there. And Rivera Beach was a thriving city. They had some three-story buildings out there. They had a big hotel, and they had a bandstand in the park back there, and they had band concerts at nights. And all the brides from the Army Post in San Antonio used to spend their vacations down here.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, it was quite a little city. And but that was there when I came. It started, though. Buster Cope bought this land from the ranch and developed it. Yeah, Carl Haney, his nephew, ran it later. I don't think there's any Carls in Corpus. He's not in good health. And Walter Coke is still living. He was the Attorney General of Texas for a while. He still lives in Austin. That's the Coke's youngest son. But the boys didn't take to this kind of a life or anything, so he got his nephew to come down and take charge. Then Mr. Coke left here then and went to Beaumont. Bought a lot of land up there the same way near the coast. But he put in figs up there. Had a fig orchard up there. Made a world of money off the figs. But they were very interesting people. They came from Germany over here. And Mr. Niebauer, who died recently, and I think Kurt, and I know it's the old girl, it's the doctor, went to school here. They lived down at Rivera Beach. Mr. Niebauer died not too long ago. And one girl still living down there. They brought Mrs. Niebauer over from Germany with them. She was about 18-year-old. She was Mrs., in those days, let's see, in Germany, they called them their right-hand maid or something. She, not a secretary, but she waited on them, you know, met people for and things like that. And she got over here, and she was in love with Eric before she came over, and she got real homesick, and she begged to go back to Germany and ask her why. And she said, well, she was afraid some other girl was going to get her boyfriend over there. And instead of going and letting her go back, they sent him passages to come over here. And they married and lived right there, stayed with them all those years. And what I know of that is just what I got from them, and, you know, just knowing them down there through the early years. You may have heard the other day, and I said, Carl Kaiser that had this car wreck out here southbound. Well, that's old man Niebauer's. His youngest daughter was that boy's mother. She married Bob Kaiser from Bishop. I think they're separated now, but that was their boy. Marcus Phillips sold land down there for a while for them at Rivera. They had a bank down there, you know. The whole building's still down there. I don't know what they've got in that building now. They were going to fix a museum down there, but they've got a kind of a planned community, company beautifying Rivera or something once in a while, does something. But through the bank up here, that was the National Bank down there on the corner, you know. Then we consolidated them with Claiborne.
What year was that?
I think it was about 47, 48 we consolidated with it. I was the only officer in the Claiborne Bank that was invited to remain. I have a lifetime job down there. I haven't been down there in 20 years on the job. Mr. Bob Claiborne, that's how close the people they are to me, just friends all through the years. Bob told him when they put the banks together that I was the only officer he wanted to keep in the bank there, and that I had a lifetime job there. So this good old history went into that. Now, I felt very strongly it should be preserved. And they said, Jack Roberts had the contract. They're just getting ready to raise it. And we got Ben loose and get busy on it real quick and went to it. And the range said if there's any extra expense changing the plans and things, why? Because they weren't going to fight for it because they felt like if the public didn't appreciate it enough, they wouldn't appreciate it if it was kept, don't you know?
Yeah.
And said they would pay any extra charges it cost. I don't know what if they had to or whatnot. I don't know. They didn't do anything changing the front of it. Left it like it was. That's all we asked for, just a front wall, because that was always left standing after the fire, you know. And then the picture of her that was in that building. And they asked the trustees, when the building was completed, asked for a picture of her to hang in the hall. They had it hanging in a... Well, it was hanging in the superintendent's office right across from a room that was a library. And there was the sweetest little verse under that. I used to know the words of it, but I don't remember. Anyway, she spoke of Turin as being God's pearls, the culture and so forth, and don't you know that what kind of pearls they were depended on that and education and all. It was a real sweet little verse under it. So when we built they built the new high school and kept her name, just moved it over there, it was still our school, not the same building, but it was still the same school we graduated from. We decided, we were just starting that year, just getting organized good. But the first thing we did was try to replace that picture. And I went out the range and Bob helped me. And Henrietta helped me. Went to every place. And I said, no, I still don't find the picture I'm looking for. I remember that picture. If I ever see it, I can put my hand on it. We hunted. And finally, we asked Leroy, the housekeeper out there. And he said, you know, Miss Chandler, in the library, there's some little pictures. There's a picture, one or two pictures of Miss King in there. And we went in there, and there was a little silver frame of this little picture about this big, what I was looking for. Mm-hmm. The very picture. There was a larger picture out there years ago, but some of the grandkids got it, I'm sure. No telling where it is. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we took that, Roy Elmore down, he took the thing, and I priced with artists, you know, to paint a portrait of it, you know. We couldn't afford it. It just went up in the too much money. At that time, Margaret Mosley, Dick Mosley's wife, was working with an importing-exporting house in Japan, and she had had some 8x10s made of her children. I saw the work. And I said, Margaret, do you think you could get us about a 28x40 oil painting done, a portrait? And she said, yeah, I could. I don't know what it would cost. She told me these cost so much, and I said, well, that doesn't matter. Can you get the price on it? And she said, yes, she could. So she wrote and asked them. And they said it one that size would cost us $100 American. We hadn't gotten anything under $1,500 priced here, you know. So I got this picture. I wouldn't dare send that picture, so I had Roy make a blown up picture, 8x10 of it. When I found the little picture, I showed it to Bob. And I said, Bob Claiborne, this is the very picture I've been looking for. He said, oh my Lord, Marion, I've forgotten about that. Said that was always my favorite picture of my grandmother. So after we got it and all that, I told him that we were going to have this work done overseas and that we were going to have it done in colors. We thought it'd be pretty in color. And he said, well, let me tell you how to do it now, because I want you to do it. It looks like Grandone always looked. And I said, yes, I know. I saw her many times, but you tell me now, we're going to do it the way you say. And she had on a black dress, always wore black. And she wore a little ribbon around her neck, this ribbon, little black ribbon. And her hair was not gray, but it was silvery gray, don't you know? And she's sitting, this picture was an interesting thing because it looks like that somebody just spoke to her. It's the most natural looking thing. She was sitting in kind of an old mission style chair, and she has a book in her hand, and she had her finger in the books, you know, to hold her pages, and was just sitting looking up like this with her arms like this, you know. Just the most natural looking picture with a book in her hand, don't you see, which was fitting for school, with a book. And so none of us mentioned the book. You know, we never thought about the book. We didn't know what book was she reading, or the color, nothing. But we did specify the dress and all that. And when that picture came back, there was this book done in the most expensive, the color that most expensive bookbinds are done is a shade of red. And that book lights her whole face, just the color. When you see it, don't you know? Now, you've seen the picture, I guess.
Yeah, I've seen it.
And so when it was finished, before we went to Corpus, we went over to the art shop in Corpus and got it framed. The frame cost us more than the picture did. But anyway, we before it was framed, I took it up to Bob's office, called him one morning. He was up there. I told him I'd love for him to see it before we framed, see if he approved of the picture of everything before we framed it, because I wanted the family, somebody, to be happy about it. And I also took along this 8x10 I'd had blown up. And since he said that was his favorite picture, I told him, Roy, Elmore down there, I said, let me have that 8x10. He says, you want this 8x10? I said, oh yeah, let me have it. I said, I believe I'll give it to Bob Clayburgh. He liked that picture. And he said, oh, Miss Johnny, you got to put it in a frame. I said, no, I'm not going to spend any money on him. He can buy his own frame. He's got more than I have. And she says, he said, well, I just don't want you to take it like this. And I said, well, I can't help it. That's what I'm going to take it. Put it in an envelope so I won't get it dirty. He said, no, you're not either. I'm going to give you a frame. And he gave us a real pretty frame. And I don't know if it's still down in the office or not. They begged him to leave it down. I took it up there. He looked at the, I didn't even tell him about the little picture. He looked at the big picture and he backed off and he'd get up and walk around his desk and come back and look at it. And I went back and he just said, Marion, I don't see how it could be any better. Do you? I actually feel good because I felt like, you know. And so then when I had to leave, I said, well, if you like the picture, we're going to go ahead and have it framed in a gold leaf frame and with a little plaque just still on his name on it to hang. Then the school was nice. When I went out there, they decided to hang it in that middle panel and not put anything in those other panels, so it just stood out, you know. Gave us a nice setting right there at the entrance when you go in with it. Put so many compliments. But I gave him this other picture, and he was just real grateful for it. And when I left, the office girls were begging him not to take it to the ranch, to leave it there in his office. They wanted the picture left in the office. I don't know what he did with it.
I just got a little bit more tape. Can you tell me anything?
You mean, y'all, this is going down?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know you were putting all this stuff in.
Oh, this is the kind of stuff they want, though. Uh-huh. Can you tell me a little bit about the traveling and whatnot, and the, you know, the roads and the conditions and things like that? You know, if you wanted to go to Alice, what did you have to go through?
Well, I had to go through the ranch pasture. I played basketball, and Mrs. King always sent her car in to take us, and she sent her chauffeur because we played afternoons. There were no outdoor courts in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And she, whenever the game was over with, Alice or Corpus, Bishop, wherever we played, Robstown. Especially from Alice, we loved to go to Alice because we got to what we call a halfway windmill. Coming home, we'd play about 2 o'clock in the afternoon and get back there about 4 in the afternoon. And old Dad Courtright drove this big old Packard car. And he'd pull out the side of the road and say, well, Grandma King sent you supper for your refreshments. And they'd spread a picnic lunch, fried chicken, jugs of buttermilk, lemonade, and all such stuff as that, don't you know? And the roads were real bad. We'd have to cancel our games because we couldn't get through. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing was, I went to work in the bank in 1919, I guess about 9 or 10 years after 17. I don't remember how long it was, but anyway, not over 10 years it passed by, we decided to organize an alumni. And it was in the summertime, and we decided we'd all go down to Rivera Beach and go swimming. Everybody would take a picnic lunch, and we'd spread it together and organize an alumni. And we were all working downtown, and just about an hour before we were ready to leave, the heavens opened up and just came a flood. Well, there's no going.
Yeah.
And we didn't want to be outdone, so we went up and played a hall, and we spread our picnic all over the floor. And some little eager beavers got through before the others did, and they got up and got to playing the piano and got to dancing. And we'd say, come on now, we've got everything else picked up and finished up. Come on, let's organize. Oh, Marion, let's do it some other night. We're having such a good time. Let's don't do it tonight. It's raining and everything. And that, it blew up. And all the years went by. Just about a couple of years before the new building was finished out here. I was up at the old building, talking to Mr. Jones. He was the principal up there. And I said, this is my old school. I said, I finished here in 1917. He said, oh, you did, Miss Chandler? I said, yes, I did. I said, last experience I had with the schools was I tried to organize an alumni about 10 or 12 years after I graduated, and all the youngsters wanted to dance. They weren't interested. Oh, he said, why don't you do it now? And I said, not talking to me, man. I said, too much water's going under the bridge. I wouldn't attempt it. And we got to talking on, and I walked from there on down to the post office and ran into 3 women living here that I'd gone to school with. What have you been doing? I said, I've been up the old school. First time I've been up there in years. I guess first time I'd been there since the fire upstairs. And They said, what are you doing up there? And I said, I went down some business. I had to see Mr. Jones. I said, we got reminiscing a little bit and talked about the time we tried to organize the alumni. And I said, golly, the school building burned. I guess the records, we don't have anything before 25. I said, there's no record up there. I ever went to school. And they said, wouldn't it be fun to get some of us old timers together again? And I said, well, it sure would. And they said, well, how many of us are living here? And I said, well, somebody sit down and look in the telephone book and see how many you can find. We talked about it. I came home one day and sitting here idling, reached down here and picked up the phone book, and I counted 50 names in a few minutes. Eddie was one of them, you know, he was one of the graduates. And so I called one of these women. I said, say, I counted 50 names without just a little while in that book. I guess there's still more because I just ran down and hurriedly. And I said, wouldn't it be funny if we said, maybe we can get 10 or 12 of them together just to reminisce some evening. And one of them said, let's go down to Central Power and Light. They have a room down there. They let you meet. Say, we won't get none of us have to worry about having them or fixing refreshments. Let's just go down there and have a meeting and see if anybody's interested. We got down there. Well, we had a big crowd because some of them brought their wives or husbands, you know. And we said, well, we can't organize you tonight. This wouldn't be fair just for the group to finish before 1925. I said, we'd have to make it open to the public and let all of them come in. Mm-hmm. So they said, well, let's set a night and go out to the courthouse district room. We were going to meet in the county courtroom. It was too small. We had to move up the district room. The thing was crowded. That was the interest shown right in the beginning. And I could have fallen down. I never had any idea of being the leader of it or anything like that, you know. But I went to work, and I have replaced all the list of graduates that all the permanent records were destroyed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew, you see, I've lived here so long, and that's one reason I've been able to clear a lot of the cemetery stuff out here, that I know 3 and 4 generations, don't you see? Mm-hmm. And I'd call this grandmother and say, look in your Bible, I know you got a list when your granddaughter graduated, your grandson. Sure enough, they kept those lists through the years, you know. Mm-hmm. That's where we got it. So I have the names, as far as you could find them, of every class that was graduated. Well, high school doesn't even have that.
Yeah.
And then down through the years, we came across a number of them that said they did graduate here. And when I'd go out there, and they would check their permanent records, it never had been marked on there that they had graduated.
Hmm.
That's really, yeah. And so they would correct a lot of theirs from my list. You know.
I came across something when I was interviewing somebody else. When was the pavement put down between Kingsville and Rivera?
Mr. Clayburgh did that. He bought the bonds himself. I kept them in the bank for years. He didn't want to do it. He kept begging the county to wait. The state would come in and build a highway.
Mm-hmm.
But they just felt like we had to have some way to connect the towns up in the county. And that was done in, right in the long and early 20s. I don't remember the year. I guess it'd be a record at the courthouse maybe or something. I don't know. But I had those bonds in the bank down there. They were coupon bonds. And every time we'd have an auditor, he'd want to count those bonds. And there was thousands of dollars worth of them, you know. Mm-hmm. And he was clumsy. He couldn't handle them, and he'd make me count them. And I did that for several years. And I finally decided he's getting the money for it. He came in one day, and he said, well, let's go get the bonds. And I said, okay. I went out and brought the boxes out with them in. He said, well, you going to count them for me? And I said, no, sir, I'm not going to do it this year. I said, I've been counting those things for you every year. You sit there and puff on that old cigar, I'm going to let you count them this year. I remember that so well, because kind of I was doing his job for him. That was the first paving, of course, then they came through and they topped all that. And then that road that goes from Rivera out to Rivera Beach now, it's a state highway now.
Mm-hmm.
That follows the old bed of the Interurban Railroad. Was
it does. Yeah.
Somebody was here not long ago. I talked to me about that Rivera Beach Hotel. Interested in that? Know something about it? The old hotel, you know, mm-hmm. down there. It was quite a nice place there years ago.